thanks to Jess for another great show, as always. You are listening to KBUT Community Radio, 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.7 in Gunnison, and worldwide at kbut.org. This is Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program, airing every other Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. I am your host, Kate Gnapp. On today's episode, we're going to learn more about the Gunnison Valley Observatory, located just south of the city of Gunnison. The observatory officially opens this Friday, June 14th, and they've got a couple special events coming up as well. We are joined now in the studio by Rob Brown. He serves on the board of the Gunnison Valley Observatory, and he operates the telescope on site. You also might recognize his voice from KBUT with some of his super fun music shows as well. So, Rob, thank you so much for coming in today.
Sure thing, Kate. Thanks, sir, for having me.
Yeah. So, for folks who haven't been, can you describe how we got here? What is the history of the observatory?
Okay. For a long time, I thought it was myth, but which I've been able to check out and somewhat verify, it's kind of interesting. It literally started with a couple of Gunnison gas station owners who thought that having an observatory would be a great idea. They sold bottles of water to raise money. The telescope they purchased was out of the Black Forest in near Colorado Springs from a guy who was a nuclear engineer, had built this thing prior to 1986 to view Halley's Comet. They got the telescope, and it turns out there was a small diaspora of astronomers who vacationed here in the summer from the Texas area. And this all somehow merged into an organization. They had the telescope. We lease the land from the county. The telescope itself is actually owned by the county. We got donations for the building as well as the work that went into constructing it. And this all came together in 2008 when we opened to the public. So that's the 1 minute history of GVO.
Yeah, I love that story because, like you said, it doesn't really sound real, but that
no.
It is.
No, it's that I've kind of checked out what I can, and that seems to be what how it all came about.
So, can you describe the observatory for someone who has never been before?
Okay, if you've never been, and especially if you've never been and are coming out, you won't see a big dome. We're hidden behind a berm that blocks out the light. So if you pass Hartman Rocks, you've gone too far, just a little few hundred yards too far. You come in, park, walk the rest of the way in, and what you see is a building with a dome on it, and that's where our main telescope is. It's a 30-inch reflector, and doesn't sound big, but the way it's kind of like when you catch a big fish and say it's 6 inches, but where I come from, you measure it between the eyes. It's big. The way you measure a telescope is by the size of either the lens or the reflector, the mirror. We have a mirror. It's a 30-inch mirror. Outside, you'll see other telescopes. We have a bunch of small telescopes that we put out for the entertainment of the people waiting to view the main telescope. You also see a shed that contains a small research telescope. Until you get upstairs, that's what we have. We also have some bleachers in the back, and that's where we do presentations under the stars.
Yeah, I mean, the times that I've gone, it's really cool. You're walking down a lighted path. You eventually end up at the observatory, like you said, and it kind of just pops out of nowhere.
Right, yeah, it's a curved path just so, like, extraneous light doesn't get in there.
Yeah, it's really neat. And the times that I've gone, you have telescopes set up outside as well for viewing on certain nights.
Right, Right. Yeah. What that's for is there are some objects that are too low in the sky that for technical reasons, we can only lower the main telescope so far. Otherwise, the mirror will fall out, which sounds like a design flaw, but really it's designed that way because if you were to clamp it down, we get such extreme temperatures here, it just wouldn't. It would distort the mirror. So that's what the small telescopes are for, looking at a lot of times planets and some other objects where we just can't point the main telescope.
So what can folks see in the night sky here in the Gunnison Valley?
You mean through the telescope?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There's some, provided the, our biggest enemies are the moon and the clouds. And I'd advise people, unfortunately, we can't control the weather yet, but it changes real fast here. And you don't want to look out the window and say, I'm not going to come because it's cloudy, because it seems like half the time I'll get there, sun will go down, and boom, it's clear. But then, of course, we do spend a lot of time fighting the clouds. But as I recall, I think last year we only had to cancel two nights because the clouds were otherwise able to work around them. And the moon, we plan ahead for that because we know when it's going to be up and when it's going to interfere. But some of the typical objects are usual suspects. We'll start out with double stars. There's some double stars you can look at, and what that does, stars are easy to see and gives people a chance to get used to the eyepiece. One of the biggest challenges with people, especially if they've never used a telescope before, is getting them to see through the eyepiece, because it's like looking through a soda straw. If you're off just a little bit, you won't see anything, and that's the one. It's frustrating. There's only so much we can do to help them find that. So we start off with a star, which is easy to see, gets them used to looking through the telescope, and then moving on to other objects. There are what's known as globular clusters, which are clusters of stars, 100 to half a million stars that these things orbit outside the galaxy. There's always planets if they're up. Right now, I don't think we have any up that we can see through the main telescope. Clusters, they're nebulas, gas clouds, usually illuminated by a white dwarf star. Some of those we can see. And then we move on out to galaxies. There are some galaxies that you can see. And in those cases, you're looking 10 million years out, because light we see, it actually comes from that object, so it's been traveling that far. And as a point of reference, one light year is 6 trillion miles.
Wow. And you had kind of talked too, I liked that you pointed this out, about people's expectations. So you see these really crazy images of space, but when you're seeing it in real time with your actual eyes, it's a little bit different. What is that like?
Yes, that's part of my job is I view it as managing expectations. People these days are used to stuff online from either extremely large telescope, ground-based telescopes, or things like the Hubble and now the James Webb Space Telescope. It's not going to look like that. So I don't want people to be disappointed. I describe them as bug splats, or the Ring Nebula. I call that a soggy blue Fruit Loop, because that's kind of what it looks like through a telescope. But the thing you got to realize, it's I liken it to viewing a grizzly bear online versus actually seeing one when you're in Yellowstone. You're actually viewing the object. And as well, up until the advent of space telescopes, this is how astronomers did their business back from the 1600s, when Galileo first pointed telescopes skyward.
Yeah. And so you talked too about some efforts to get a new telescope. You mentioned this one's, it's old, you know, it's been
yes.
around for a while.
Yeah. So like I said, the only thing that was used when the telescope was rebuilt were the optics, but those date back to prior to 1986. The mechanisms, though, there's gears and motors and electronic components, and just as time goes on, it's getting harder to maintain it. It's like owning a 69 Plymouth Barracuda. You're always going to be working on it, and that's not going to get better with time. It's already a fact that our procedure for aligning the telescope for the evening, we point it to a bright star. The telescope, we use a computer program to do that, but because of all these inaccuracies, it doesn't always point exactly where we tell it to. So what we do is, using this bright star, we can manually steer the telescope to that star. Then we enter a correction into the computer, so the computer thinks it's looking at the right place, and with this manual correction, we know it is. The trouble with that is it's good for a small area of the sky. If we move the telescope very far, we have to do this again. And it takes time, and we've got people waiting to view stuff. So that's a long way of saying we're in the very early phases of shopping for a replacement telescope.
Mm. Yeah, that's exciting. And you mentioned, too, not only research that's going on right now, but the potential for more research with this type of equipment.
Right. So one of the things that's in our charter is research. And we are doing some of that out there, but just not with our main telescope. It was originally hoped that this telescope could be used for research, but it never... measured up performance-wise to be able to do that. It works fine for what we've been using it for, that is letting the public look at objects. But some of the things we could potentially do, open it up to Western. They're already doing research there. Our vice president, Dr. Suzanne Taylor, is already doing research out there, just not with the big telescope. But we could open up potentially to Western students or even colleges and universities in the state. And even, you know, every once in a while I'll be watching the news and they'll come on with a high school science fair, and these kids are doing some pretty cutting-edge research, and I think it'd be cool if we could open it up to them. The ironic thing is that you don't need a big telescope for research. What you need it for is direct viewing, as we've been doing, because it's a matter of physics that the mirror on the telescope, or lens if it's a different type of telescope, basically it collects light. And if you've got a digital camera or an optical sensor, it doesn't take a large telescope because that sensor can sit there and look and stare, and it can track. But with your eyeball, that's all you get. The light that comes in is what you see, pun intended. So to keep doing what we've been doing, we pretty much need a telescope of similar size.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of wanted to go back to people's experiences. When I've personally gone to the observatory, even though I've been multiple times, I'm always kind of filled with like a sense of awe and wonder and excitement. And you're, you know, sitting there in the room as you're guiding this telescope towards certain positions for everyone to see. What do you witness from people who are seeing these things in the sky for the first time?
Oh, wow. It runs the range. Every once in a while, there will be some people that just aren't impressed, but especially people that have limited experience or never looked through one. I told you about the difficulty of seeing through the eyepiece, and once they get it, it's like this, oh wow!
Yeah.
So, and then that's the feedback I'm looking for. And I know they're seeing the object.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I just recall seeing planets, like you said, these huge star clusters. It's a really almost like spiritual experience in a weird way. And thinking about how people back in the day were looking at the sky for all these answers, and they didn't have this amazing technology like we do.
Right. Well, it's a great time to be alive, because it's one of those things. You answer one question, but it raises literally hundreds of additional questions. Yes. And that's cool thing about the sciences and astronomy, that they figure one thing out and there's a thousand other questions about it.
Right.
In terms of being excited, some people asked me about that, and I kind of thought I was jaded up until early May. I was showing a friend some of the objects, and I just for kicks, I steered the telescope towards something that we don't usually look at. So it was new for me. It was a galaxy, M94. I think they call it the Cat's Eye Galaxy. First time I saw it, I think I said, oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I still get excited over new things as well.
Absolutely. And I know you guys have even more new and upcoming events and types of, nights that you're going to host. Do you want to get into what you guys have in the works for this season?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great, great question. I'm glad you asked. So if you've already been, take another look at our website, because we've got new things. A couple of them are, we've got what we're calling deluxe tours and premiere nights. So the deluxe tour, normally on a Saturday night, we'll do three dome tours. And what we're doing now for select Saturdays, it's not every Saturday, just because, again, we're constrained by the moon, but on select Saturdays, and you can find them on our website, there'll be two regular, roughly half hour tours. And we typically show, we try to show three objects in that half hour for those two or three groups. But now on the deluxe nights, we're going to extend it. And so it'll be about an hour, and we're going to try to show about six objects out of the list of usual suspects we have.
Wow!
And then the premiere nights. Our first one is this Sunday. It'll be a smaller group, what's going to happen is, we're calling it Spend the Evening with an Astronomer, because Dr. Suzanne Taylor, who I've already mentioned, she's our only professional astronomer. So, but we're all, I'll point out, we're all volunteers. No one gets paid at the observatory. But Dr. Taylor's going to be giving a talk as we present the objects that we see. And like I said, it'll be a smaller group, so you'll get more time to view. And again, we're shooting for at least six objects. Some of them we don't normally view, just because it takes more time to find them and so forth. So we're looking towards a more intimate experience.
And you mentioned, too, that we have some fun things in the sky coming this fall.
Oh, yeah, there is a comet on its way. It's called, if I'm thinking of the right one, I quickly looked this up before coming here. It's C/2023-something. And, it's supposed to peak right around the beginning of October. So there's always something new. In fact, a couple years, it was one or two years ago, there was a supernova in a galaxy, and we're not sure if we saw it, but we pointed the telescope towards that galaxy, and we think we saw something a little brighter than the rest. So, wow. Yeah, there's always something new.
Yeah. And I'll say even for myself as well, but going to the observatory kind of opened the door for me to just look at the night sky with my own eyes and look at constellations or the moon or, like you said, meteor showers.
Yes.
Really interesting.
Yes. So especially with smartphones and the apps, you can use one of those or several good ones out there. You can use those to kind of guide your way around to start with and go from there. A lot of people start with binoculars.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff that you can see better through just using binoculars.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Rob, is there anything else you would like folks to know? Anything we missed?
Well, let's see. The I would like to point out, like, one of it, we've got projects going on,
right?
Out at the observatory. One of them is we're trying to build a radio telescope, and that's started several years ago with our current president, Kit Flores Madison, came up with the idea. Then a couple years, we kind of launched it, bought some equipment. About a year ago, one of our board members, Zeth Palmer, he's also a physics student at Western, he really got interested. He secured a grant from Western for some equipment. So we bought some equipment. We have an 8-foot dish telescope on its way. So you know, that's just one additional thing we're trying to bring to the observatory.
Lots of exciting stuff in the works. This is going to be a fun season.
Yeah, it usually is.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the air. Always appreciate you.
It's my pleasure. Kate, thanks for having me, and it's kind of fun being on the other side of the mic for once.
Right. And here soon we're going to hear you on this side of the mic for an upcoming music show.
Let's see. That's July 18th. I'm covering for Triple L.
Doing, I look forward to
dance
it.
Music.
Perfect. Well, you are tuned into KBUT's public affairs program, Community Matters. Special thanks to Rob again for joining us on today's episode. And in case you just tuned in, you can listen to the full episode at KBUT.org.